We have special news. No, let's.
there is a difference in this recording from all Woo! Other recordings.
We're actually finally, this is our first ever recording in person. Oh my God.
We're in the same room and it took us ages to figure out if we were doing it right. And I'm really paranoid and I may hit pause on the recording to check in a bit that it is actually
recording. I think that'd be good because like we tried to do it on my laptop and I just gave up. I was like, nah, I can't do it. I'm getting way too stressed and anxious.
I know. Becca uses Reaper and I am, oh my God, I have Logic. Why am I using GarageBand? I spent like €800 or no, that's an exaggeration. I spent like €400 on Logic and I'm here on GarageBand.
The one great thing about recording in person is I can literally send the evil eye to Nikki so much better. Direct eye contact. I can't talk
about it. I don't know what I was saying. I feel like there's going to be way more giggling because we don't have the awkward Zoom lag that makes me kind of feel like impending doom is
and
happening.
And good luck to Becca, who's going to have to listen to like the clear audio spillage to both the tracks.
Woo! Imagine us like sitting in the same room recording a podcast, but we've also got like sound boots.
Well, to be honest, we were saying like, I was like, if it just doesn't work out, we just sit in separate rooms.
Zoom. One of us is in the bathroom and one of us is in the living room.
Maybe not the bathroom. Too echoey.
Becca the editor is out.
Too echoey. Like, sorry. But we just hit record. We didn't talk about talking points, but I had like two in mind.
Oh.
One was, this is something, sorry, if you can hear my dog snoring, she's on my lap.
She may be barking quite soon.
She hates all other animals and there's a beautiful big window in Nikki's and I'm looking out at birds and she will attack. Not attack, she just
making,
bark.
I was making weird noises earlier and she was not having it. Like.
She's a beautiful dog, but like it's her way or no way.
Yeah.
But something that we brought up, like just chatting about, was previous scores we've given our books.
Oh, we realized that like we used to be shy and now we're ballsy bitches. And like last week I rated a book like 5 or 6 out of 10. Five. And that was the first time other than a book that I actually like didn't like.
Yeah. it was insane. And like I've actually gone through like all the books that we've done in this podcast and I'm like, I really scored really high for a lot of these. And like even some that I've like looked into now from like being a lot more on Bookstagram and like following authors on Twitter. Mm-hmm. There are like some books that I've covered by some authors that I'm like, you're actually kind of controversial and I didn't know that at the time. And now I feel really bad. So.
I know. I feel the same way. Sometimes there's authors and I realize they're like incredible people and I didn't talk about them enough.
I know.
We're going to get better at this.
We're getting better.
Yeah. It's kind of like healing. It's not going to be a straight up road. Like it's... We're going to get worse before
I mean,
we get better.
As well, like we talked about, like our first episode is something.
We're not even on episode 40 and we're already mortified at the first episode.
Oh, I can't, I'll never be able to listen to that one back. Like,
no, never.
Never.
Other than the one thing that like plays over and over in my mind is I still think one of our best friendship moments was, Wuthering? It's Wuthering.
You're like Wuthering Heights? I think it's Wuthering.
The only Wuthering Heights I know, say it everyone, is Kate Bush.
But yeah, no, it's just in case. Like I just feel like even since like being a lot more active on Goodreads, I'm just like, it's quite a little bit. Like even looking back in the books, I was like, did I enjoy it as much as I thought I did?
Yeah, that happens to me. And my rating, like I feel like if we recorded the episode a day later or an hour earlier, my rating would be entirely different. I don't feel like I have a rating system. I just have a vibe. I'm like, oh, I have vibe check.
I know.
It's like I like lick my finger and I stick it in the air and I'm like, yeah, that one's a 6 out of 10.
Whatever like the gods tell you, like.
Yeah, I go with God in that one.
But speaking of like Goodreads, something that I've seen kind of sweeping across Bookstagram, because I'm trying to get more active on there,
mm-hmm.
Is Storygraph, which like looks really cool. And like I've done a lot of research in it in the last 24 hours. I joined it myself personally. So it is similar to Goodreads, as in you track your reading progress.
Mm-hmm.
But what it is, it's a lot more kind of purely based on books. And it's really cool. I'll get it up on my phone.
Oh my the god, she weird. Can do that. And I can watch her do that. It's really weird. Becca's in like 4D this week.
Oh my god. But
what if 3D is that it looks like it's coming out of the TV, and 2D is that it's flat, and then 4D is that it's real. What is a podcast when you're only in someone's ears?
0D.
Presenting negative 4D.
So what it is it was set up by a wonderful woman.
Talk in the mic, bitch.
God's sake, this is usually my thing. I'm using her mic this week and like...
It's a very sensitive mic. It's the levels are going to be a nightmare.
Hi, me. I'm sorry, editing me. So it was... just for those who don't know, like Goodreads is owned by Amazon, which isn't something that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of like since joining Storygraph, I've read a lot of like Goodreads versus Storygraph. And like a lot of people are like, look, Goodreads, it hasn't been updated. It's still in like version 2.0. And like it is clunky. Like a lot of people don't like using it.
It's really annoying that you have to do the reading challenges. You have to add in a date.
Yeah.
That trips me up all the time. It's like you were at 14,000 books behind. And it's like, oh, actually it's
it took
two.
It took me ages to figure that out.
But it took you like an hour to fix that. So
but,
you had another book read by now, Bahel.
But with Goodreads, I just don't like supporting Amazon at all. I mean, I will use it in some sense still because it's a lot more community based and like a social media kind of thing. Whereas Storygraph, it is purely on like the books and like recommending books that like are going to be what you're going to enjoy a lot more. So like I'll just show Nikki here. Sorry, I'm having to like talk into the mic so she doesn't give out to me. Okay, sorry. We just paused because Nikki wanted to check the levels. Good, Nikki.
Thank you.
But I have now been told that I can't move my head. So, back to Storygraph. So what I love is that like it gives you like a full, like it's just made up of graphs, which Organize Me loves. But if you can see, it shows you what kind of, it shows you kind of what books you like their moods.
Okay.
The moods.
Oh, it's very personalized.
Yeah,
graph.
It's
I
so.
I thought this was like.
No, this is like personal. Like, it's all completely personalized,
okay,
which I absolutely love.
Cool.
We're not like paid to talk about this. I'm just like really invested in this.
Paid, yes.
You get your pace. So, like, do you like reading fast books, slow books? I'm more of a slow person. And then your page numbers. And like, are you fiction or nonfiction?
Becca, it's
I'm like 95% fiction.
What are your genres like?
So I picked my genres, but like you could only pick like 1 to 5 genres. So I think as you read more and they learn what you like reading, they start recommending more, which is supposed to be like a big feature of this. You can still follow people, like you'll see what they're currently reading, reviews and that, but it's not kind of like messaging. Like, which I think with Goodreads, it has that social aspect. But I think if you're into kind of like tracking your books and you prefer maybe supporting something that is a lot more ethical.
Yes.
Like I read.
Fuck you, Amazon.
I read an article and it was like, it was so scathing towards Amazon. And it was like, Storygraph. And like in brackets, it was like, they pay their taxes. It was scathing, but it is black owned.
Oh my god, I gave it. It stopped recording because I gave such bad feedback. I was way too close to the mic when I went, woo!
Are we recording it?
Yeah, no, we're recording again. Once I said it stopped, yeah, we're back.
So it's, it is black owned. It was started by an amazing woman, Nadia, and. Like, it's only, I think, launched in the, like, last year and a half.
Oh, my god, yeah. And it's already getting so much traction because I have like this week I've started to see it, and
I've
then you
seen it, yeah, like everywhere. So
I'm gonna sign up today.
We're not paid to talk about this at all. It was just something that I've seen and I was like, I don't know, do people know about it? I think as StoryGraph kind of develops more and they get like more reader
feedback,
like they'll definitely be like,
yeah,
things that they bring in. But like, it's really cool and I was just so interested to see like what kind of moods I was more into.
When I saw the graph, I panicked because I was like, oh no,
I thought you'd love it because of all the colors.
Fun, but yeah, no, the graphs are pretty. They're not, like, graphs aren't fun. Graphs are pretty.
Yeah.
Graphs are fun when they are made for you. Not made by you, made
no,
for you.
No, they make it all. Yeah. And, like, I'm kind of interested. I'm going to see and things like that. But I'm enjoying it so far. I've only been on it less than 24 hours. And I just thought, for those of you out there that don't like Amazon, it's a good thing to support someone
else. It's a good thing to stick in Jeff Bezos' face and wave around and say, ha ha.
Like what we like doing.
I know. Like, I love my Kindle and I hate that I love my Kindle.
I know.
I hate that I love it so much.
I just try not to think about Amazon when I have things like that.
Look, there is no ethical consumption in capitalist world. Like, there's no way.
No.
Like, you know, you gotta do the little things, and then you gotta do a lot of the little things, and then you gotta do only the little things when it is applicable.
It's doing what you can do, do you know? That's all.
If everyone did little, no one would have to do a lot.
I know.
At the end of the day.
But yeah, those are my things from this week.
I have a PSA.
Oh,
I have a public apology. Now, I'm not going to talk about, was I wrong? I'm going to talk about, okay, I did upset people.
You were wrong. Don't even.
Maybe this is something that I just keep in the back of my mind instead out of my mouth.
Wrong.
I referred to Limerick, the lovely, I didn't say
as a derogatory
it wasn't a
beautiful term. As a derogatory term.
I didn't say it wasn't a wonderful place to be, but
she referred to it as a term that has been wrongfully associated with Limerick and it's narrow-minded.
I refer to it as Stab City and I've been called out on it. And look, this is the first time and hopefully last time, because I do like to think that, like, you know, I want to set the record straight. I will stand up to my mistakes. Now, I could defend this, but I'm just not going to. I've offended.
You shouldn't defend
it. Four people in Limerick out of the population that maybe agree with me. I've offended four, and that's all that matters.
No,
Limerick is
none
not
of the
Stab
population
City.
Agrees with you.
Rebecca speaks for every person of Limerick, including me now.
Yeah,
as
how
I
dare
am
you.
Now in Limerick.
Yeah. This is coming after my mom, when I was like leaving to come over here to record. Mom was just like, there was something that Nikki said. I was like, what? And
oh,
then
so
she brought
sorry,
up that
I
she like listened
you,
to like a recent episode, and she's like, she used the S word. I was like, oh no. And like, my dad was like, yeah, I didn't like it. And like,
I'm
my
a
dad.
Cork woman. Look, I've been groomed in that way now.
And then Killian was, my dad was like, and Killian was really offended. So I was
he could rip my head off, like, literally.
He has the power.
He really does.
He
has the arms.
If you ever want to come over for game nights anymore, you're gonna have to publicly apologize. As well, we should probably introduce ourselves.
Oh, I'm Nikki.
I'm Rebecca.
I am the problematic one.
I don't know what I am.
I'm trying as
I'm the anxious one.
The anxious one and the problematic one. It's going to be a great time.
It's going to be a great time. So, and you're listening to the Grim Reader podcast.
Oh, we didn't introduce it. How many minutes in are we?
It's all right.
We're like, Becca, we're like 15 minutes in.
It's all right. I'm not going to change it around.
This is our podcast and we can do what we want.
Yeah. You can't tell me what to do.
So on the Grim Reader, if you're a first time listener, you probably stop listening by now.
Don't stop listening. We want those listens.
So if you are a first time listener, and if you are not and you just didn't get the memo last time, we are a book podcast. Yes. And we will each, Becca and I, and sometimes our darling Chloe,
yes,
will each bring each other a book that we have read and show each other the front covers. We will proceed to judge the book by its front cover, as you are supposed to do,
yeah,
and guess what the book might be about. Then when we find out we're ridiculously wrong, the person who's actually read the book will give a book review.
Yes.
So enjoy the chaos. If you haven't been enjoying it up till now, you're not going to enjoy it any further. I'd say just click away.
No, listen to the rest of it. Like, no, give us a chance.
Realistically, if they're not liking it and stop, they keep telling listening, people to not, they're going to get more heat and more angry.
Stop,
and we're going
to
get
people not to listen. We're not going to have any listeners.
I just don't want any mean messages on Instagram.
We just usually get really random messages in our requests.
Remember when we got asked to sponsor a ball shaving product?
They were like, we've looked at your feed and we think this is applicable to you.
Yeah,
and you're like,
shaving
smooth
testicles.
My balls.
Yeah, it's literally at smooth my balls. This is a call out. You didn't research. You didn't do your research.
Just
pal.
Love those. And they sent multiple messages.
Cancel,
like, from different,
at smooth my balls.
From different accounts. But yeah, that was fun.
That's definitely an MLM. But look, we'll talk about that later. We're going to talk about books now.
You're going to talk about books. Woo! I love when you said we're a book podcast. I was like, we're like a chaotic book yeah, podcast. I'm just going to preface this by saying that I got this book from NetGalley. Very kindly sent to me from there.
Look, if you listen to episode one, we've kind of made it. We got a free book, lad. We got a free book.
So I did read it. I wasn't paid to read it. And the review is still going to be very honest.
Yeah.
So just in case anyone's like, oh my God, this is like totally biased. It's not. Believe me.
Hashtag ad.
You'll know when I start reviewing it, but go on.
Yeah, with NetGalley, it's a review for a read. A read for a review.
Yeah.
A read for a read, so amazing. Okay, so I'm looking at No Such Thing as Perfect by Emma Hughes. And the cover is already distracting because there is a dog ripping apart the F of the word perfect. And that's iconic. Anyway, the book cover, it's this lovely kind of mint green going to turquoise. The writing's in yellow. And we have a girl in a pink dress. She is dressed like, that's me.
Yeah.
That's me on the cover. I only noticed that now. It's like she's wearing runners. She's wearing a pink flowy dress that has sleeves. She has red hair. This is the Nikki Griffin show.
This is actually Nikki's autobiography.
Yeah, this is the Nikki Griffin show, bitch. And it says on the book, sometimes off the rails is actually right on track. I think this is the story of Becca trying to forgive me for my chaos on the podcast, because she's realized I'm actually right on track. I'm actually the
nice
reason NetGalley gave you a free book, girl. Let's get real.
Nice try.
Okay, and there's also a review by Daisy Buchanan. She's the author of Insatiable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it says, tender, funny, smart. I loved it. And you can just tell by the cover already, this is going to be kind of the light, kind of summer reading genre. I can just tell it's going to be a lot of fun. She's walking a dog on the cover, trying to pull him away, but he is determined to rip up the letters. And I love him for that. So, what the thing everyone wants to know, what is the dog's name? First of all, the dog on the cover looks like a border collie. You can go and see how beautiful he is when you look at the Instagram at the Grim Reader podcast.
Yes.
But this border collie / sheepdog, his name is Kermit. I was going to say Wally. His name is Kermit. He is a rescue that our protagonist, what's her name? Her name's Nikki. Why am I asking? That's me. So Nikki, not me, but me. Nikki, it has gotten this dog who is a rescue because she's been having a really hard time, okay? She's moved city. I'm going to try and not make this autobiographical, but it's going to get autobiographical. She's moved city. She's really stressed out. She's her car is broken down, but she's gotten it fixed. She's fixed that, you know. She's getting used to this new town, and she now has to work from home because this is actually set in 2021. And COVID, like, I'm sorry to bring it into the literary world. I hate when it gets mentioned to books because it's already happened to me. But yeah, homegirl is working from home now, and she has all this time on her hands, and she decides, like, I'm going to get a foster dog. Because I don't know how long I'm going to be working from home, because this shit is cray. You just never know. So she fosters Kermit the dog. And his name is Kermit, by the way, because he was left at the rescue site with like a box, and it just said Kermit the Frog on it. And had like Kermit the Frog like memorabilia. It was obviously like an old Kermit the Frog box, and he was left in that box. So his name is Kermit. And he is ridiculously cute, but kind of to the vibes of Lilo and Stitch, he is there to ruin her life first.
He
of
is
all,
Satan.
First and foremost. Yeah. So I think there's definitely a moment where she's playing like Elvis Presley and he like sticks his paw on the jukebox and opens up his mouth to be a record player. Like a Lilo and Stitch. Okay, I'm getting so off track, Becca. You are. I'm just so excited you're in my house. And we're talking about a book about me. Okay, so she fosters Kermit. And he is really, really cute. Everyone around her is like, oh my God, this is such a good move for you. I am so happy for you. But the second everyone's kind of left after like welcoming the puppy and it's just her and him, the dog hates her. At least comes across as if it hates her. He is so bold. He, on his first night in the house, he eats the couch. And you may not think a dog can eat a couch, but I'll assure you that Kermit the dog can eat a couch. She comes out and it's literally just like the bare wood of the couch and only a little bit of couch cushion. And then she's like, where the fuck is this dog? I'm going to kill it. And she goes over and looks at the dog, and the dog is lying on its side, not looking good. And she's like,
of course.
Oh, for like, fuck's sake, he's eating all the cow cushion. Like, yeah, he's poisoned himself.
Definitely so not good.
Literally, she's had him one day and she's already bringing him into the vet. And the vet is like, you've nearly killed this dog, you horrible human. And she's like, I left him alone for 45 minutes. So the dog has to like get like emergency surgery.
Oh Jesus.
And she's only had him like,
why is this like Marley and Me 2.0?
Oh no, it's not sad. This is a comedy. So the dog already has to have emergency surgery. She's only had him 11 hours.
Oh my God.
It's like the middle of the night and she is like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. So the dog's surgery bill, the vet comes out and hands you the bill, and it's going to be €3,500. This is set in Limerick.
Okay.
Actually. Oh, and she is like, what the fuck? Like, so she pays the €3,500. Not that she really has it to spare, but look, the dog is very cute. Kermit is hopefully going to be loving. So she gets back. Kermit has a cone on and is really like begrudgingly like staring at her as if it's like her fault that he decided to eat the couch.
So it's like, it's your fault you left me alone for 45 minutes.
It is. I was a new guest in your home. I was uncomfortable.
How was I supposed to know the couch isn't edible?
There was nothing else for me to eat.
Like,
so he's like, we're going on to the second incident, and the dog like escapes. Like he literally sees a cat, the rival cat of the series. So we've got Kermit, and the cat is actually named Piggy, believe it or not. Miss Piggy the cat is across like lounging on the lawn outside, and the dog sees and jumps out a three-story window with his cone on to go and harass this cat, and he kind of like
Breaks his legs, kills himself.
But he manages to like, you know, he like hops on the roof of a truck and hops on the roof of a car. It's like, it's a comedy girl.
Does he not know that dogs don't have 9 lives?
Dogs have more than that. Dogs are plentiful. So it nearly breaks his legs. He goes and terrorizes the cat to the point that the cat is traumatized, and the neighborhood are like, this dog is vicious. That's his new claim. So this girl is like, oh my God, I have a dog and a cone who the neighborhood hates, and the dog hates me, and I don't have a couch. So all of these instances keep recurring, but then I think the dog brings I think the dog kind of gives her such a hard time that Nikki has to look introspectively and kind of realize that, like, I'm not happy. I'm really quick to anger, and I actually aggravated the dog, and I'm the reason he was out of the house and like jumping everywhere is because I was ignoring him because I was so in my own head. And the dog obviously introduces her to a love interest.
Ooh.
Obviously.
Like the Dalmatians.
Yeah, like the Dalmatians, except the guy's name is Emmett. Like, not all about it, graphical at all. And he's very handsome and he's very funny.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the important part.
And the dog's like, this is my new owner, see ya.
Yeah. And this I am using, like, I just have to let you know that I am manipulating this podcast for my own personal gain, because Emmett, you should allow me to get a dog.
Well, by the time he actually listens to this episode, it's going to be like
2028.
Yeah, like it's the summer really of long
2028
time.
Oh, but yeah, that is my guess. I think it's the charming story of a begrudged woman and her new dog, who she's first chosen to foster, and he gets, I think the end is like he finds someone to adopt him, and she, like, it's like running through the airport, he's going to be adopted by someone in a different country, she's run through the airport to stop them because she decides she loves the dog, and it's like, yeah, and Emmett helps her. Thank you, Emmett. Okay. I love you, thanks for listening.
Okay, it's pretty much completely wrong.
I know. No, it was correct.
It's pretty much completely wrong, but okay. So, No Such Thing as Perfect by Emma Hughes. It is, like, literally just released, like, in the last few days.
Is it out today?
I don't think it's out today, but, like, when we're recording this, I think it was August 5th that it was released, so, like, 2 days ago. So, like, ooh. So, I obviously got this a few weeks ago and read it. Sorry.
Was it that boring?
Yeah.
Jeez.
So, I will say that I didn't really enjoy this book. Yeah. So when I was like, you'll know why when I start talking about the book, like, this is completely honest.
Oh my god, I have to be offended because that is me on the cover.
It's such an endearing cover, and like, you know, I was maybe, I did say this in my review that I wrote for it. I was like, it could have been me at the time, but the more I reflect on it, I was like, no, it was just a bit meh. So, right, what I'll say about the book. So this is about Laura. She is a journalist. She's working in London, and her life is far from perfect. She's a bit of a hot mess when we meet her, and she is hanging on to her job by like her fingertips.
Oh, no.
As she's a journalist, as we know, a lot of print media is literally like their jobs are being cut.
it's like the dad in Good Eggs.
Yes,
it is.
It's very tough, and she is pretty much told, like, she has, they're going to be watching her work for like the next 3 months, and like then they'll make a decision. So, like, not nice words to be told at the start of the book. And then we find out that she is currently living on a blow up bed in her sister's attic.
Oh,
yeah,
homegirl. No.
And paying her sister like small amount of rent. Like, this is London, and like she moved out of her former place because her roommates were moving in together, and she's like just heartbroken over that because we soon learned that she had a crush on one of the roommates.
Oh no!
And the two roommates ended up getting together, so it makes it all worse. Like, everything's just like, oh my god, this is not good.
Oh,
so
god.
She's just like, her,
what's her name?
Laura. I told you that.
Okay,
yes.
Sorry. I was in my
Nikki
own head.
Wasn't listening.
She is Nikki.
And she is, yeah, her dating life is non-existent. Like, she is kind of sick and tired of dating apps. A lot of people have been there. Same. Back in the day before Mateo.
I
kind of
loved them.
So yeah, so we learned that like her two former roommates have gotten together, and like one of them, she had, the guy that she has a crush on, she had dated him years back, but they were friends, she moved in with him, everything like that, and it was always kind of in her mind that like he was always going to be available. do you know, and never a good thing to be like. And any time, like maybe the once or twice that he did try to initiate something, she shut it down. So like obviously he learned like, okay, this is a no-go.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to do this. Like, she's uncomfortable. I'm not pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm respecting the boundaries. So
Becca is just like Merlin is just sprawled across.
Merlin is trying to move and go to the window to bark, and I'm not going to let her.
No.
Not while we're recording.
Got her in a choke.
She's being cuddled. No, she's being cuddled. Don't get people on to me about animal cruelty.
Merlin, I love this dog. Like, if you are worried for Merlin, she is the most spoiled dog I've ever met in my life.
She's the most loved. The most loved. So we see her. She's really worried that, like, she's never been in a long-term relationship. And to be honest, I think that a lot of people are made to feel that way. You know, there's such a big thing of, like, oh, you've never dated, like, long-term or, like, seriously before. And you're like, that's not fair. Like, life can get in the way. You just haven't met someone. Do you know, busy? Like,
I'm too busy for bitches.
Like, do you know, or
too
like,
busy for bitches.
Anything that you were doing was casual. That's what you wanted at the time. Do you know, like, it's your decisions, all that kind of stuff. So she had written an article about her dating life and saying like it was like she's not happy with it. So she gets an email from a new dating app called Cupid.
Oh, yes. Okay, Cupid.
And asking her would she like to be the first person to try it out in England.
Being the first person on a dating app means you're the only one. Surely.
So I was like, I'm not sure about this as a plot point, but okay.
But is she not like the only one?
See, that's why I was like, this doesn't make sense.
Plot hole number one.
But so they were like, we'd love you to try it out. Like, we loved your article. Like, you're so funny. And we'd love to help you find like Mr. Right. And all this kind of stuff. And I think originally she's like, and then she gets so worried about her job. She's like, yeah, this is like, my boss loves it. Like, we have to do this. And the way this app works is incredibly creepy.
Oh,
like I did not like it.
This is my favorite genre.
I was like, no. So what they do is, no swiping involved. It's, you have to give over all of your data pretty much that, they can track you when you're browsing your phone, when you're looking up articles, like access to your laptop, phone,
no.
All that.
No.
So they get all that information, like what you search.
No.
They saw what I searched. They were like, she's an idiot.
Oh my God. It's like so creepy. Like, I'm literally like, why are waffles square sometimes and circles other times? Is it a cultural thing?
I think it's just because of whatever waffle maker
I
they
think
have.
It's a cultural thing. I think waffles are round when you are in America. Correct. Waffles are square when they are made out of potatoes.
I think you're making way too much into this.
Well, I'm just saying, Becca, to you it might not mean much, but maybe to my perfect man that I will find through Cupid when he browses through
so
the
so much of this episode Google of Nikki searches. Is Nikki professing her love for Emmett in this episode, and then she's like, when I find my perfect man.
I have him. He tells me to stop googling like a person ought to.
To be honest, yeah. So like I was immediately, I was like, no, I would never use this dating app. And like they say like you do need to make like a donation, but they're like, pay whatever you can. So you're like, people are gonna pay 50p like. I was about 50, to say
50p
50p, you know, 50 like 50
cent.
I was going to say 50 cent, but it's in England, so I was like 50p, 50 well, pence, whatever they say. But
pence.
Imagine
if there was an English rapper called 50 pence.
But so like,
I'll
yeah,
take
the,
you to the bookies in it.
Mickey's just in a world of her own, like so far. So she signs up and she's like, yeah. So she has meetings with them. Like, they don't talk about that much about like what they do, but like the woman she has contact with does bring up what her search history with her a few times. And it's bad. Like, oh, some
this
of it
is so this is in an era before GDPR.
It's so creepy. And so what they're doing is they're scrolling through their database to find the perfect man for her. And she is matched up with this guy called Adam. And I will say, Adam is an absolute sweetheart. Like, he's tall, he's like muscular, all this, like, very handsome. He's Scottish. We all have a Scottish accent. Like, he seems to be like perfect on paper. Mm-hmm. But there's, to be honest, like, reading all their chapters when they go on out on dates, there is no spark. Like, they're just not meant to be together.
Yeah, and, like, and that happens. And it sucks.
There's, I think, a bit on both sides. Like, we don't get anything from Adam's point of view, but you can kind of see that both of them are kind of like, I'm going to try and make this work because we're told that we should be perfect together.
Yeah, and also, you have a lot of dirt on me.
Yeah. Like, what if we're blackmailing someone? Like, damn.
There's a lot of dirt.
So, yeah, the whole Cupid thing is just so suspicious, especially as you get on and you're like,
what is this an illegal
organization?
What, like, inspired her?
I don't know. But anyway, Laura starts developing feelings for someone else, and that someone else actually happens to be working for Cupid. And Cass, I'm going to say, is a slime ball. I hated him.
Oh, he's a clammy clam.
Like, the thing with this book is that Laura needs to learn to love herself before she goes out on dates. And it's something that I don't think she really takes on board throughout the book. And, like, I was just saying, like, she needs...
Even the reason she got on the app, if her job was going south and she went, yeah.
Yeah, it's just... I think she needed to take a time out and kind of reassess what she wanted and like maybe go to therapy, maybe have really big conversations with people around her. Because, I mean, even her family situation, like, her parents have never had a good relationship. Like, they split up in the book. She doesn't have a great relationship with her sister. Like, there's a little bit of like the sister is like, does really well, she's really successful, she's married, like, her husband is a dote, like, their husband and wife are like polar opposites, all
and
this kind of stuff.
And that's kind of hard for Laura when she's seeing that and she doesn't have it. That's probably why she's jumping into things.
I just wanted her to, like, a different direction for this book. Like, that she could realize that, like, I don't need anyone. You know, I work on myself, kind of thing.
I can take myself for breakfast, brunch,
exactly,
lunch, and dinner.
And, like, it's just, I don't know, like, I just didn't enjoy that aspect and, like, just kept being told, like, oh, you'll find the perfect person for you. And you're like,
you don't
need to. Do you know? So, I mean, it was a big thing. Laura is really likable, but, like, a lot of the things that she does really, like, they will drive you up the wall. Like, I was just so frustrated with her at times and being like, yo, cop on. Like,
girl, this, get it together.
This is not good.
Get it together.
Do you know, like, just a lot of things that, like, she's just, I think, bottled a lot of feelings up and never discussed them. And you're like, this isn't good for you. Like, this isn't healthy. And yeah, I mean, the ending was like, I wrote my review like straight away and then like read some others like when I was doing my write up on that for the podcast this morning. And like, people were agreeing with me. Like, there was a lot of people that said like it's a 5 stars and it could be for you. But the people that were kind of similar to my rating were kind of like, yeah, it's just, what is going on in this book with it? You know,
where is the dog?
The dog is her family dog.
Okay.
So he doesn't make an appearance, but like, now after having read the book and then reminded like what the cover is, I was like, the dog isn't that big, like, in the book. Like,
what's his name?
I can't remember. That says it all. That says it all. That says it all.
A good story will give us a good iconic dog.
Yeah, if you want a good dog, you should read Scenes of a Graphic Nature. Satan.
Yes. Yeah, Satan, the Jack Satan. Russell. Caroline O'Donoghue got him tattooed.
I know.
What a good tattoo.
But yeah, it's just a book that, like, I didn't really enjoy where the plot was going. Yes, there was a bit of, like, conspiracy around Cupid and all this, which was slightly enjoyable, but to be honest, and I hate saying this, it didn't keep me focused the whole time. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of felt myself drifting or kind of being like, when's this chapter over? Which is never a good thing with a book. Aww. And I always feel really bad talking about it on the podcast whenever that does happen. But it just wasn't for me. I read books that I've been absolutely hooked, from start to finish, and they've been like whirlwinds and stuff like that.
It doesn't sound like there's an awful lot of substance.
To be honest, I didn't think there was.
It's kind of like dating is funny.
But the whole thing was like just felt kind of forced.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm it's going to be pretty low. Like, it was about a 3 out of 10.
Oh, yeah. This is the lowest.
Yeah. I hate to say it. I do. Just it wasn't my cup of tea and I didn't really enjoy it. And then like when I compare it to other books that like have just
it's hard when you have like we've read an awful lot in the last year that we've reviewed, because I think you can read loads of books, but then when you start reviewing them you're more likely to compare them and you're going to compare them much quicker. Like, yeah, it is a shame,
but I'll just get up. Merlin, she's like slowly moving away. She's like
the way she's sitting right now, her butt is on Becca's lap and her head is like contorted.
So just a little bit about Emma Hughes. She is a London-based author and journalist, and she mostly writes about food and travel, but she has also written about everything from relationship advice to psychedelic therapy, insomnia, and what the future holds for dating apps. So this is her first novel. I'm reading this from her website and it's like really light coloring, so it's really difficult to see.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you've read it, I'd love to like hear your opinion on it. This is just mine. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. 3 out of 10.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a kicker.
Yeah, I don't like giving, but when you don't enjoy a book, you have to be honest. Yeah, like,
you do. You do. And honest reviews only. Exactly. Yeah. And the other thing is that's Becca's opinion.
Exactly.
What is yours? Let us know on Instagram at the Grim Reader Podcast. Merlin is just.
Merlin's like, run away.
Merlin's had enough. And Becca, I'm going to send you the cover of my book.
Okay. Ooh.
Such a good cover, isn't it?
I have to like sit in a way that I'm actually into the microphone, but I can also see my phone out of the side of my eye. So I'm looking at The Final Girl Support Group by Grady Hendrix. And she is the... She?
He.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm very sorry.
I hadn't heard that name before either. So.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. So he is a New York Times bestselling author of The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires. Now, I have heard of that one.
That's on my list.
I have heard
it's
of it.
On my list.
I can guess what it's about, but this is a very striking cover. And
it's
really
great.
For anybody who follows me on Goodreads, which isn't many, but my personal account, I have this marked to read, but I don't know what it's about.
Okay.
I can't remember. So
it's really funny because when I picked this one up, it just wasn't something I was like, oh, I'll tell Beck and Chloe I bought this.
Mm.
But as you said, like we had this conversation earlier that like this is something Becca would have read a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big crime fan.
Mm-hmm.
So this one is a very striking cover. It is a black background completely. And then there is a red plastic chair. We all know the ones, like they're uncomfortable to sit on. Do you know if you're in a, what would I say, you're in a waiting year. I remember when my parents used to give blood. Oh, those chairs. Oh, but the only thing that made it worthwhile was one, watching my dad like have needles stuck into him and him being like,
no, Becca, we're changing.
Snacks afterwards. You'd wait 2 hours, just get your snack bar and your Tito's. And you're like, I didn't do any work, but I was like, I'm a child, give it to me. But the red chair is dripping blood. So, okay, right. The final girl support group. Where to go with this? I'm immediately getting a sense that, okay, I'm going to go for a rural town in, name a American state.
Oh my God, I don't know if it's a state or a town. I was going to say Wisconsin. Am I really off?
I don't know.
Okay, wait, I'll name a different one. West Virginia.
West Virginia. So, okay. We have, I don't know the layout of West Virginia. So, I hit the mic. Okay, we are set in a very small town in West Virginia. And we're opening the book with this news team arriving at like this, like we just arrive on this like chaotic scene of like news vans, police, FBI, all this. They've tracked down a serial killer. And they've tracked him down, I don't know, is there woods in West Virginia or like wooded areas? But they've tracked him to like this cabin outside this really small town. And they have actually found his, like this victim. And she's obviously referred to as his final victim.
Mm-hmm.
Final girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say that we open up on this scene of like intense drama. Like she's obviously traumatized. She's witnessed. I'm going to say he's like really twisted.
It's like the very end of a horror movie.
Yeah. He was really twisted. And, you know, think of like maybe that he abducted his next victim and then made them watch him torture the previous one and kill them. Do you know, like really sick. And, why he wasn't caught for so long was like he kept changing his
MO. Yeah.
And like, do you know,
we watched Criminal Minds.
Yeah. I used to love that show. And he used to change like venues and like location and all this. So like he was really hard to track down. So we immediately see her being like, she's been missing, I'm going to say, for a few months. Like her time was running out from what they'd worked out about this serial killer. And immediately, you know, like press are trying to get at her and she's taken to the hospital, you know, she's checked out. And, you know, that's the end of like the first, like, we're, you know, prologue. So then we're going to flash forward like maybe a year and she is in a support group and it's kind of a therapy, for victims of violent crimes. And, she is there very begrudgingly. She's like, I'm fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
Like, nothing. Like, I'm absolutely okay.
She is in denial. Yes, girl. Like, sorry now. You are not fine if you're feeling fine.
And I'm going to say that, like, she is not the nicest at this point. Like, I think there's...
She's calloused.
Yeah. But she's like, deeply...
What's her name? You'll never guess the name of this character.
Why do you always do this to me? I'm going to say her name is Cleo.
Cleo. Oh, that's a nice name. And it's nicer than the main character's name. That's awesome.
Oh, thank you. So her name is Cleo. And we kind of see her in this meeting. And she is like rolling her eyes at other victims as they talk about their trauma.
Cleo,
like,
don't be like that.
Cleo is not who you want to be. Cleo is not nice. And like whenever she's invited to talk, she's like, no. She's, and they're like, we think it's good for you. And she's like, I'd rather not.
Does she talk like this? She's like, I'd rather not.
No. No, oh, she, okay. She's just like, no. She's so repressed that like, she's like, I'm not, like, I flopped that door.
She's so repressed, she doesn't even have an accent.
So, like, the people running this support group are beginning to get, like, pissed off at her. Because, like, She's bringing a lot of the group members down. She is making them feel very self-conscious about their traumas. And like, even there was a time there, she was like, I've been through it worse. You weren't kidnapped and like tortured and like all this. I don't know what accent I'm like, doing, but
you weren't kidnapped and tortured.
Like, so I'm going to say that like we follow her home and like we can clearly see that she has, started drinking a lot and really become very alcohol dependent.
And she's really like to deal with her problems. It's a different Cleo to what's in yes. group.
So we can see that this like angry front that she puts on in this group is purely as a protection front. And we follow her home. She's living back in the apartment in her original one. And it's got extra security measures, all this, and still she doesn't feel safe, which I wouldn't blame her.
No.
And she opens up her answering machine messages, and like they're all from her mom being like, hey, you should be home now, just checking in, like let me know. And we have like flashbacks of her like demanding that she moves back to her apartment, and her mom's like, I don't think you're ready, like I just, please listen to us, we just want to help. And she's like, no, you're controlling me and all this. So we can see someone that is very, very hurt and has a lot of stuff going on that she is not getting help for. And
because she's not letting people help her.
Yeah, you know, she doesn't want to face what she had to go through. And so we see a few of these, like her interactions, and I'm going to say like, she is very numb to a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. She just feels like nothing can hurt her now.
In fairness. Like, so, I just can't be mad at this poor girl.
But.
Good tubbing.
Good tubbing. suddenly, someone from the support group has been killed in a hit and run. And hey. It's being treated as an accident. Sorry, I'm making sure that she just doesn't look out the window. This is Merlin. She's hey, going to be barking at the birdies.
She's allowed to break if she wants to.
So someone in the support group has been killed in a hit and run. It's being treated as an accident. They're obviously trying to hunt down whoever, you know, was involved. Obviously it would be manslaughter. And yeah, it's not treated as like overly suspicious until a few weeks later another person in the group dies from an overdose.
Oh shit. And they all look kind of and they're all like, and accidental.
Oh shit.
Kind of. Killer so, who is changing his MO all
so
the time.
So after the first one, we kind of see that Cleo is just like, oh, good riddance, like to that person.
Oh my god, Cleo!
She is like, her unfiltered mind is like, oh Cleo, like no. It's bad.
Oh,
and
she's
like,
just damaged.
Like, really, really, really damaged. And the second person, she's like, she's kind of like, this is really weird. And she kind of talks up about it. And they're like, Cleo, like, please be respectful. And she's like, this person was very anti-drugs.
Yeah, like, she was like, am I the only one
she
who
was
knew
like,
that about
cause
her?
Because we see a flashback of her with this person. And, like, this person was, I'm going to say, like, a 40-year-old nurse. And she was like, I can like inject people with needles, but she's like, I have a fear of them myself.
And it's really, it's noteworthy that Cleo is someone who's really callous, but is who's clearly paying attention to
yeah.
other people
and like,
despite it all.
She brings this up and they're like, you never know what troubles people are going through. And she's just like, this is bullshit. And she storms out and this guy follows her and he's like, hey, like, I think you just need to talk. And she's like, piss off.
I think it's.
And he's like, no, do you want to go for a drink? And she immediately hears drink. She's like, I'm in. So they have a conversation, kind of gets to know her a little bit more. And she actually starts talking about what she went through briefly until she's like, wait, who is this? And she storms out of the bar and we find out that this guy is actually a reporter.
Oh
yeah,
Cleo.
So
oh,
she Googles him, like he gave her real name and she Googles him and like she has his phone number, like he put it into her phone while they were at the bar and like she immediately like sends him like abusive messages and he's like, hey,
does she like, make like fake Instagram accounts and just be like, you're stupid?
No,
your
she doesn't
head,
but like she's like
stupid.
I'm gonna like ring the police, like you
yeah.
should never have been there. And he's
and
like,
you don't have permission to publish.
So he actually feels like regretful and says that like his boss pressured him into it. And he's like, I'm just trying to keep like a roof over my head at this point. But he's like, hey, I'm not going to say that I met you because I think you're going through stuff. So eventually we start seeing like these accidents in quotation marks happening a lot more frequently. Like the first one, there might have been like 3 months between them. And then suddenly it's like one of them has committed suicide. And, you know, another person had a driving accident. You know, they drove off a cliff or something. And it's all just kind of suspicious. And she starts getting really paranoid. Really paranoid. She rings the police and she's like, I want an escort to like these support groups. Like,
yeah, they are,
this is like we're getting like down to like the single digits. And she tells him about the reporter and she's like, hey, like he was there, is he could be suspicious. Like, it has to be someone in the group because it's always supposed to be anonymous, but you know, clearly isn't. And the police are like, oh, this isn't the first phone call they've gotten off her about stuff.
Because she's paranoid and she's damaged and she's like, she's been let down before.
Exactly. And they don't investigate it and they don't believe her. And, you know, so not good. And eventually, like, I'm going to say that it is literally like,
Becca, your stories are so much better than mine.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I'm going to say that eventually we get down to like her being the final one.
The final girl.
Yeah. Final girl. And like, it's gotten to a point where like she hasn't been, no one has gone to the support group. Like, they're all suspicious at this point.
Yeah, they're all like, we're going
to be good. And they're like, we can do it online. And she's like, no, I will have my video off because I don't want anyone to see what my apartment is like.
Yeah.
I don't know. And she even is then like, can they even track my IP address? Like, can they find out where I live? And I'm going to say that eventually the therapist for the group calls on her. And he's like, look, I just came to check on you. I just came to check on you. And she always is like, I didn't get any bad vibes from him. And she lets him in.
He did it.
And we find out he was the killer.
No.
So unbeknownst to her is that this reporter guy has been pretty much stalking her for the last few months. Because he's been...
he's kind of obsessed with her.
He's obsessed with her, but he's also... I'd say there's another point where they met and she was like, people are being killed from the support group. And she's like, no one's listening to me. And he tried to publish the story. He got fired. His editor was like, this is conspiracy theory level stuff.
Mm.
So he's been following a lot of the people from the support group. And he's like, no, this is no random accident. Like, this is really strange.
Yeah.
So he's like... close by the apartment and he knows like she has a pretty set schedule. Like, he knows she's going to leave for a bar or to pick up alcohol and bring it back.
Yeah.
So he's like, look, that's going to happen, it should be fine. Like, and if that doesn't happen, he's going to investigate.
Yeah, it means something's wrong. Yeah.
So inside the apartment we have the typical villain monologue. The killer has to tell
Oh my god. It's you know when Bert is being stalked by Sideshow Bob and they get on the ship.
I love
and
that
then
one.
Bert convinces him what musical
to sing
is it?
The HMS Pinafore?
Yeah.
The whole musical.
So this guy is there like, whoa, and then in walks our reporter.
Yeah. Oh.
Get him.
So
get him.
I'm gonna say that the therapist says that like he's been running these support groups for years, and like, just he says like the victims of these violent and horrific crimes have never gotten past it, and he's like, I just couldn't live to see people in pain. So he's like an angel of death
kind of thing. God.
And he's like, you know, I make sure that like you're going out and you know you're at peace finally. And she's like, fuck your peace.
fuck you.
And she's like, I'm not ready to die. And like, we kind of see that, like, I'm not gonna say her life flashes before her eyes, but like, he brings up like her callous behavior, like her antisocial,
and she like
side.
Wants to live, but she hasn't been living till now.
Yeah. And she's like, well, obviously you were a shit therapist because I never spoke about it. And all this, you know? And
yes!
roast him. So eventually, like, she pisses him off. And he's like, I was going to let you die quietly, but I'm going to make it look like a break-in. Because, like, we all know the police aren't going to come around when it's you calling. And, like, there's a huge fight scene.
Oh, my God.
Your man downstairs in the car is, like, getting suspicious. And,
he's gonna save her.
So, and I'm gonna say that he sees something. He sees like a light, like suddenly going off in the apartment. He's like, that's really weird.
Becca, this is so good.
It's very predictable. But great. I'm going to say he comes up and he's like knocking at the door and it's gone completely silent. Like, I'm going to say that she has been injured. Like, she's been stabbed somewhere and she's locked herself in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh my God, I don't know who's at the door. Like, and the therapist is like, it's fine, George. I'm saying George. That's the name of the reporter, apparently. He's like, it's fine, George. We're doing a little session. Like, I don't think she's all right. And he's like, I'd just like to see her. You know, and just see that she's okay. He's just like, I'm not leaving till I see it.
Yes.
And your man's like, oh, she's in the bathroom at the moment. Like, I promise you she's fine. And
then there's like a knife being slowly drawn from his back pocket. And he's like,
he's already holding
the
bathroom. He's like, covered in blood. And he's like, do you mind just opening the door? And he's like, I don't have to open the door for you. Like, and he's like, this isn't even your apartment. Open the door. And, so your man like turns off the lights and opens the door and your man's like, oh shit. And he's like, why are the lights off? Like, why are the lights off?
And he turned them off as well. What weird behavior. Like, he goes, yeah, you can come in. And he turns off the light.
Because he wouldn't see him covered in blood.
No, oh my God.
So
weird.
Your man, like, the therapist is hiding, obviously, from him, like, to pounce on him. So he starts calling out, like, Cleo's name and, She's at this point like delirious. She's lost so much blood. Like, she's fading into unconsciousness. And she tries to respond, like, can't happen. And obviously,
it's like Rose and Jack, George. George.
So he is immediately suspicious. He gets his phone out, he starts dialing 999 and he's like, I could die in this situation.
Yeah, like he is fight or flight.
He
knows how those final bitches
are
feeling.
So he is turning back towards the stairs and to like run away.
Jump!
Because he's like, okay, she's either lying unconscious in there, if I can get people here rather than going in and like staying outside to like monitor the situation. He's like, he's going to attack me as soon as I walk in there. He turns his back. Your man literally grabs him
George!
From behind and like starts just stabbing away. And I'm gonna say that like Cleo has somehow managed, like,
she's a final girl.
But like, yes, this is implausible, but she manages to like stagger out, like trip the therapist up. They like, the phone is like ringing like the emergency services and like the two of them are like barely able to get out, like, we need help, we've been stabbed. Cleo is like, I'm going to say that they're trying to stab the therapist so that like he's still like, he's the only one like not injured. And he's like trying to kill them. He's like choking the reporter. Cleo's like trying to, like, she's lost so much blood. Like, she's very weakly trying to stab him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say that the scene kind of ends like on this huge cliffhanger because they lose consciousness.
Oh, yes.
And so what we find out is that, I'm going to say Cleo dies.
No, she's the final girl, Becca. She's not supposed to die.
So I'm going to say
Becca,
that.
No!
From what we saw, we only thought that she was stabbed. That he actually injected her with something as well.
Becca, no.
And because she'd lost so much blood, she didn't have anything to fight this. And she passes away. But
and this has all been written.
Yes. So George has written a huge expose article on the police force not responding to her claims.
Yes.
And things like that. There's like people have resigned over this. He writes about her life and says, like, calls on like that there wasn't proper support there for her.
Mm-hmm.
The therapist working the case wasn't even licensed
in
the state.
Yes.
All this kind of stuff.
Get
and up. Calling for a bigger reform on supports there for victims of crimes. And it's just a huge thing. And we can kind of see that maybe there was a law lobbied in her name and stuff like that. And that's kind of how the book ends.
Becca, this is so good. You just wrote a whole book. Woo! I'm not going to be able to give the listeners as much info because I don't want to ruin this book.
I'm
going to
say that like my book plots have been getting really long recently.
They have, but they're foolproof. There was no plot holes here. We didn't have a GDPR breach in our story. Okay, I want to tell you about this book because you're not far off. So first of all, The Final Girl Support Group by Grady Hendrix. So if you don't know what a final girl is, Becca did touch on it, and Becca is kind of right on the money. Now, final girl is a trope from old school horror movies. If you're really into them like I am, then you know this and you love them. You love all our final girls. And basically, to qualify, like, a final girl is the last survivor at the end of a horror movie. And she usually kills her killer. She defies the odds and she does it. She is she's his last victim and the one he couldn't get. And this and book,
can I say, not possible in real life.
Girl,
we're
no,
all gonna die.
No. She's like, I think I love a lot of final girl stories because I love the absurdity of them. But like, people can survive these scenarios. Like, do you know when you read like Mary Vincent?
Yes.
Have you know her story? Like, people can do this. You know.
I love, you know,
Mary Vincent.
I survive.
Yeah.
Like, or I survived. Like, those stories, like her Mary Vincent story, like, that will always be like one of my favorite episodes of.
That's one of the best, the like, most like, she's one of the most incredible women.
Yes.
Incredible women going. And if you haven't read her story, it's really hard to hear, but she's amazing.
Yes.
She's like
a powerhouse.
Amazing. But anyway, I'm going to come back to this book. So usually what I love about final girls is they kill the bad guy and he comes back, and they kill the bad guy and he comes back, and it's sequel and they never fucking die. I love it. I love old school horror. So anyway, this book, like Becca says, Final Girl Support Group, it is about a support group for final girls. And in this book, there are, wait now, can I check how many of them there are? I think there's 7. Okay, in this book there are 6 final girls, and these are all 6 victims of 6 different killers, of 6 different slashers throughout history. And like, they're all very clearly based on horror movies of the time. They're all kind of really an ode to them. So we have our protagonist, Lynette Tarkenton. I hate the name.
What is that surname?
I hate it.
Lynette Tarkington.
I hate the name. I don't even think Lynette suits her as well. I don't know. Okay, but anyway, she is so Lynette is our main character, and she is the one we're introduced to from the beginning. We're getting her perspective throughout, and she is clearly, like, she's clearly the most damaged of these women. So Lynette is our main character. She is the one we're introduced to from the beginning. She's on her way to group, and she is by far the most damaged of these women. We're dealing with a character who's had a really, really hard time. She's like, from, we're in her perspective from the beginning. So the style of writing for this did bother me for the book, but retrospectively I can understand it because we're in her point of view the whole way through. And she's damaged. She's having, like, she is beyond paranoid. So she counts, like, she, when she's going to a destination, she'll take like an hour longer or 2 hours longer, because she'll take all these cross routes and keep going backwards and forwards, backwards, to make sure people aren't following her. So if she needs to get somewhere, she'll take 3 hours instead of 30 minutes. And she, like, when she's like on the train, she watches people's shoes because she doesn't want to be darting back and forth, but she's always watching people's shoes because she's like, you'll notice when you see the same pair twice. And also, like, if they're like, what type of shoe they're wearing, if they're wearing flats, and they're better to run at her and all this. And it's really interesting. She's so beyond paranoid, and she is like the depiction of what could happen after these series of events that we're used to seeing movie characters in. And we never get the aftermath. So this book is the aftermath. And all of the characters in the support group that we're going to meet are all actually based on different final girls from different classic slasher franchises. So we have Adrian, and she's representing Friday the 13th. Our main character, Lynette, represents, now this is one of the movies I hadn't seen, it's Silent Night, Deadly Night. We have Marilyn, who's like really kind of posh, and she represents Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Danny is kind of the badass who kind of, she feels like the most likely to save the day, and she's from the OG Halloween. And we also have Heather in Nightmare on Elm Street, and then Julia, who's from Scream. So all of these women are gathered at a support group, and just like Becca's story, their worst fears are realized, but one of them doesn't turn up.
Oh, damn.
One of them doesn't turn up to group. And the girl that doesn't turn up to group is Adrienne, and she's basically in this story one of the first final girls, and she's the reason this group was set up. She's a real advocate for this group. Okay. And yeah, so you know, our main character Lynette is one of the ones who notices and is kind of like, Adrienne's not here,
like this is weird, like,
yeah. But then in between her noticing Adrienne's not here, all of our other characters are bickering because all of their personalities just clash. They're all at different stages of healing. They've all been in totally different scenarios, but they're all grouped into this one unit of final girls. And they're all bickering the whole time a group, and group's been disintegrating for ages. And this is when we first realize that, like, Lynette kind of is like, here guys, we're all meant to be here together, like Adrienne's not doing well, Adrienne's not here. And they're like, we're all here for you. You're the one who's not doing well. And Lynette kind of has this thing like, I'm fine, I'm able to look after myself and defend myself. But she has no social life. She has no friends. Her apartment is like a caged wall. Like, she has like unbelievable defense mechanisms up. She's not doing well. And we find this out pretty quick. So Lynette, our poor paranoid girl, is on her way home after this group, and all of a sudden her address has been compromised.
No!
Julia from the group arrives and kind of demands that she's let in by Lynette, and Lynette's like told Julia she can only come if it's an emergency, and she won't let her in because she knows there's no emergency. She won't let her in, and all of a sudden this man in a mask appears behind Julia the front door where the camera is, because obviously like Lynette's got cameras on her front door. He's like got a knife to Julia's throat, and he's like, let us in. And Lynette's like, oh my god, what the fuck. And she lets them in.
Lynette. And,
yeah, Lynette lets them in because she wants to save her friend Julia. And all of a sudden, it's like the very first jump in a horror movie. She's about to shoot this guy down and he takes off his mask. He's a reporter. And Julia's like, hear me out. I just want to talk to you. And he wouldn't let us in. And Lynette's like, what the fuck?
Oh my God. I know,
it's awful. So, Julia. But then, right as Lynette has nearly killed a man who actually wasn't here to harm her, her friend Adrienne is missing.
PTSD,
it was stupid. And it's like the first jump in the horror movie. It's so true to classic horror. This is what happens. We get the first jump, it's someone messing around and it's not cool. And then all of a sudden, there's gunfire from somewhere across the street. The walls just start caving in with bullets. And Lynette is like, oh my God. Lynette runs. And she leaves Julia behind. She leaves this reporter behind. She runs. And she is gunning. Like, she has an escape plan. She has getaway car, getaway money. She gets to the getaway car, it's gone. She gets to the getaway money, it's gone. Someone's like doing this.
Someone's everything's been compromised.
So we're set up for like a roller coaster of a book. Like, so much happens. So like we're in the book now, and it is an amazing, like, there's so many twists. It's completely wild, it's completely goofy, it's really just like, it's classic horror. Like, it's crazy everything that goes on. Like, with this book, there's just so much that is taken from classic slashers. Like, all of the final girls have a backstory, and all of them are quite like I didn't get the links between all the movies. I was reading this book so fast, I just wanted to know what was going on. I wasn't really processing, but all of the backstories are quite similar to the original books. We learn Lynette's, and then one of Lynette's problems in the final girl support group before it all starts collapsing is they say that she's not a true final girl. And the reason they say that is because Lynette never killed her killer. Someone else did. Someone else saved her. And Lynette is basically
bitches.
Being... Yeah. No. Not like all the final group, they kind of say it to her. It's not that they've set her up, but that Lynette kind of, this is Lynette's time to become the real final girl. She's gotta kill the killer. And it's like, it's really, really good. It's just, there's so much happens. It's really, really, really good.
Imagine just being like, sorry, you can't really be in our really exclusive club because you didn't actually kill a man.
I know, like literally.
I'm sorry. I have the trauma. Like.
But I think what it is they're all kind of like, you're not in, like, we have the trauma of being like the, and Lynette kind of views it in herself that like she doesn't have, like there's a moment where Lynette does kill someone in the book and it's actually her first time and she kind of realizes like, oh my god, I'm very different to the other girls, I've never had this weight before. You know, and yeah, it's really good. There's so many twists, you keep thinking you know who the baddie is and it keeps twisting. It's really like Scream. It's
yeah,
it's very cool. And yeah, I'll tell you a little bit more. I'll tell you a little bit more now with how I did find this book. So I had a couple of problems with this book as I was reading it. I thought the writing was, at the time I was reading it and I was about 30% through and I turned to Emmett and I was like, this writing's kind of shit, but like the story's really good. And then I was like, okay. And then I was halfway through it and I was like, yeah, the writing's kind of shit, but the story's really good. But then I got to the end and I was like, I read this so fast.
Yeah.
I don't think the writing was shit. I think the writing was really simplified. It's a character on the run. There are bits now where it just could be written a bit better, but it moves. The pace is brilliant. Everything is brilliant. Other than, like, I don't know, I just had a little bit of an issue with the writing was all. I really liked the cast of characters. And It all was through Lynette's perspective. It just sometimes was a little bit too simple. Even though I guess, like, you know, that's her character. That's how she sees the world. I can't really judge that. I really wanted to know the ending. And when I got to the end, I was satisfied. But I still want more. I want a sequel.
You don't sound like fully convinced.
Oh no,
like.
I think it's because I want a sequel. I want it even more. There's like, there's really good, like it kind of feels like the boss fight scene. Like there's one in the middle and it's one of the most exciting things I've ever read. I was like, oh my god, there was like a perfect villain. And then we got a different fight scene at the very end of the book and that kind of wasn't as good. And I was like, oh, that's because there's more coming, there's another one. And then I got to the end and I was like, oh, there wasn't. But the middle of the book was like the best bit. But not that it died out, just that like when it hyped up again, it didn't hype up as fair, if that makes sense. So yeah, so the final girl support group, when I started doing my history, my research, that's the word, on Grady Hendrix and things, the first thing I found out is, now this is really exciting if you've read this book, the final girl support group is being made into a movie. I think a film series. It's going on HBO Max and it's Charlize Theron. Haven't said what character she's playing. I wouldn't have penned her for the main character Lynette. I would have penned her for Danny, but I think she'd make an amazing Lynette now that I'm like thinking about it. But yeah, this is being made into a show and the director is Andy Muschietti, who is the director of It, the new It. I'm so excited because the thing with this book is every time I had a problem with the writing, the story just took me away. It just didn't matter. And I think that really solidified it for me, like this is going to be a great TV show. And I don't think it's going to lose an awful lot of the book because the joy of this is in the plot and in the writing. So I think this is like an example of a book that's just going to be perfect for TV. And I think this is going to be like what Grady Hendrix does really, really, really well. So he's really busy man. He's written so many books and he has he's like a really big thing in horror right now because his debut novel, Horror Store, which by the way, I read this in an article. It's about a fake IKEA that tortures its employees. I don't understand what that sentence means, but I'm so intrigued. So that's being made into a movie and Amazon Studios are working on My Best Friend's Exorcism, which is in my to read list because the cover is like really classic video horror store kind of like founded in the bargain bin kind of a thing. And then we also talked about his last his last book, Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires, which I've been so excited to read, and that's also being adapted. He's going to be the next It guy in horror.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. So yeah, this book, I was just so, there was a lot, like, as I was reading it, I kept dissing small things. Like, I kept dissing, like, oh, I don't like the writing. Oh, I don't like the writing. And I just kept thinking it the whole way through. But I devoured this book. Mm. I read it in, like, a day and a half. And I would have read it faster if I didn't have other things to do. I would have just sat there and read it. It's such, it's exactly the 80s, 60s, 70s. It's all of them rolled into one. It's a great horror story. And I just love the trope of final girls. And there's some ridiculous fight scenes where, like, the guy, they all should be fucking dead. There's no way they're alive. And they're all alive. And they're all clamoring to either kill each other or live through it. And there's a really lovely, well, not lovely. The word is deranged point of view by one of the characters, Crazy Chrissy, and she says this really elaborate thing about how each final girl has their monster, and neither one can live without the other. Like, the monster makes the final girl, and the final girl makes the monster. And okay. it's exactly the psychosis for a villain that I wanted. I was like, this is great. It's just unbridled madness. So please do read this book. Please read this book. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
And I'm only deducting the points for, I can't shake the feeling that I was frustrated during this book with the writing. But it doesn't fucking matter. It's not fun. It's just so good. Oh, you'll eat it up. Read this book.
Yeah, okay.
Read this book.
Yeah, I have a feeling I know what the style of writing's like, and I'm just like, hmm.
It's just kind of simple. It's like, yeah. And then I ran, and he said, and he said, go, he said, and he said, isn't it all the time? But, you know, it actually...
That was in a book I read recently, and I was just like, oh, I'm beginning to get really pissed off.
No, you'll get past it, because the story is just brilliant. You're just dying to know. And every time she gets out of trouble, she dives back into it like a final girl, and... Yeah, it's an amazing trope. It's the best trope. And also, I want to give a shout out to a girl I'm friends with, Alex Perez. Now, I'm not going to give her Instagram because maybe she doesn't want it, but we may tag her. We may tag her. She is a friend I made online, an online friend, and she writes movie scripts over in LA, where this book is set. And I actually, when I saw this book was being released, I texted her and I was like, Alex, this is such a you book, because Alex has a really fab short film that she wrote and directed called The Final Girl Returns. And check it, like when you look at it on IMDb, even just the visuals are just like, oh, it's so good. It won loads of awards. I think it was Popcorn Horror Fest, whatever thing was over in LA. Ooh. I wish I was there. I'd love to be immersed in that, but like, here we are in Limerick. Woo!
And as we learned, there's nothing wrong with Limerick. We love Limerick, isn't that right, Nikki?
Mm-hmm. There's not a knife held to my back right now.
This is an announcement to say that Nikki is no longer a host on this podcast.
I've just been fired.
You've been fired.
But yeah, that is the Final Girls Support Group by Grady Hendrix. And cool. I just don't doubt that I'll be coming back at you soon with the Southern Book Guide to Slaying Vampires, because I'm really excited.
I'll be like, let's go kill Edward from Twilight.
Yeah, beach die for your toxic relationship. Even though I am Team Edward, ultimately.
Team neither.
Team neither.
But
team
with neither. That... Until next time.
Go and follow us on Goodreads, Instagram, Twitter.
And Storygraph now.
Yeah.
I've just got my personal one set up there. But
yeah, I'll set up a personal one.
Sure, I'll do one for the podcast. But
yeah. And we could even have individual ones. We'll mix it up.
We'll mix it up, lads.
Mix it up.
But until next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye, bye, bye. I'm in charge of the record button. I can stop when I like. Bye. I've blown the mic.